Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Jordan, I'm doing fine. My Twitter mentions, not so well. Not so well.
Yeah, I've ducked out of mine a little bit.
Well, that
to be honest,
that's always a good idea. Particularly a good idea when the Rams lose, particularly good when the Rams lose to the 49ers, and really good when something like Sunday happened. And Jordan, I know we want to start with Jared Goff. I'll start with two things. One, since Sean McVay came in 2017, and this, by the way, was a focal point of your story, your column that was on, that is on the Athletic app and website, and everybody should go check that out immediately. But I concur with you with what some of what you said, which is that since Sean McVay has been on board 2017, I have never heard him be that direct about any player, I don't think, and specifically about his quarterback, about Jared Goff. But he had some very pointed comments about Jared Goff that I know you can explain very well. That's my first point. Second point, just to get it on the board right now, they're not going to bench Jared Goff. So if that's what you're listening to this podcast hoping to hear, and I know some of you are, I am here to deliver the bad news straight away. But Jordan, we've talked about Jared pretty much every week, and boy, this game was a journey, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So, you know, let's put it into context too, because the Rams are 7-4. That's a respectable record at this point. They've got some beatable opponents ahead. One tough one against Seattle, but San Fran's now out of the way. Obviously, they have lost twice to them this season, lost twice to them last season. Not a great taste in one's mouth, but they are out of the way. And considering everything that San Francisco is going through right now, I'm not even sure if they would see them in any sort of like situation in the postseason. But again, looking forward to being wrong about that at some point. So, you know, the other part of the context too is Sean McVay was pissed after the loss, as he should have been. His football team turned the ball over four times. Jared Goff was responsible for three of those. And not just that, but he was responsible for three maybe would-be so fixable turnovers in situations that he has certainly seen before as a quarterback, an instance where should have taken a sack, tried to force the ball out. It led to six for the other team, Javon Kinlaw, who I covered actually extensively back when I was in the Carolinas, was in the throwing lane that Jared tried to force the ball through and brought it down and ran it back. You know, another interception pretty much directly to Richard Sherman. You know, the fumble that was recovered, it was not good. And then Malcolm Brown also had a turnover, but Jared Goff has been responsible for the bulk of the Rams turnovers this season. And that's a huge issue. And so when Sean was speaking post-game, he was talking about how we have to take better care of the football. That's his standard. We have to do this. We have to do that. We have to get it fixed. The royal we. However, I did ask him then specifically, what is the commonality between all of these turnovers? And he, again, post-game was pretty frustrated and said, our quarterback has to take better care of the football, which was not a lie. So I think for a lot of people in the fan base, it was refreshing actually to hear him actually say this specific situation is a problem. We have to get it fixed. This person is turning the ball over and he has to get it fixed. If it were a running back doing the same thing, I should hope that he would say the same thing. if Aaron Donald came out on the field and decided to just sit down at the 50-yard line and take a nap, I would hope that he would say the same thing, you know, because that's a situation where if the problem is clear, he addressed the problem, they addressed it, he addressed it briefly publicly, and then addressed the problem, obviously, internally, and they went over their film study on Monday morning, bright and early, and now they're moving forward and trying to find the answer.
Yeah. First of all, if Aaron Donald decides to take a nap, I'm good with that. I'm not going to go wake him up. I mean, that's it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go wake him up, but I would hope that Sean would at least say something from a separate room.
Sure.
Somewhere.
Maybe send him a note or something later on. Like, yeah.
Not that this would ever happen in any reality that we currently
No, I don't think so either. But yeah, really interesting stuff, Jordan. And I know Sean followed up on Monday when he did his kind of day after a call with you beat reporters and kind of said, I'll paraphrase, but kind of like he wouldn't say those things if he didn't have high expectations for Jared. And I thought that was a good way to put it. That's very fair. He's not taking shots at the guy. It's that he knows what Jared's level is and he knows he can be better than that. And he's holding him to that standard. So I liked hearing that too. I think people get a little bit, you know, Sean does veer into coach speak quite a bit, and that's fine. He still says a lot of interesting things, but in those situations, he does tend to get very general, like, we have to do a better job, you know, I have to do a better job. He very rarely, you know, puts it on a player like that. But look, you can't turn the ball over the way Jared Goff is turning it over. As you noted in your story, 10 times in the last four games, and I know people want to dissect other things. You know, they want to dissect, like, oh, why is he missing this open receiver? Why isn't he reading this defense the right way? You know, look, that stuff is important. I'm not saying it's not important, but the turnovers will kill you.
Number one thing that can cost you a football game right there. Yep.
And you can look, you're going to have problems. 49ers defense over has given the Rams problems, has given Jared problems, has given the run game problems. Like, that stuff is going to happen. You're going to run into defensive coordinators who can give you some trouble and who are going to exploit your weaknesses a little bit. But to make that Richard Sherman interception, where was that ball supposed to be going other than to Richard Sherman? Could you even tell?
It looked like there was some sort of a miscommunication on the route from Robert Woods, and then the sort of catch point that Jared Goff had intended. Now, it was so far off by so many yards that I think, you know, it goes maybe a little bit beyond a miscommunication. Maybe it also, I don't know, maybe there was some sort of a slip. Maybe he didn't set his foot. I mean, maybe it sailed on him a little bit. I mean, that was really bad. That's something that's fixable. I think an interception like that goes kind of more along the same lines of missing open receivers. And there was a miss to Daryl Henderson that I know is sort of a thorn in the side of Rams fans today. And that's fair. But the ones that are really bad to me are when, fundamental stuff does not apply, right? When you're supposed to slide, if you are taking off with the football, yeah. And you're trying to get some extra yards, I respect it. Not even mad if you try to do that in reasonable situations. Right. But then it's quarterback 101, then you slide and you cradle the football and you avoid the punch out or the fall, you know, landing on the ball, you avoid injury. When you don't slide, you continue to make yourself, quote unquote, an eligible running back. So this is what we saw for so many years, why referees would argue that they weren't giving Cam Newton calls, for example, which that's another topic of BS for a whole entire different podcast. But for so many years, they would argue, okay, well, he's eligible as a running back, so he can take the tough hits or the helmet-to-helmet contacts. You slide not only to avoid that, but also to protect the football, because the second a player sees that you are going down into the slide position, they are trained to pull up. So they're not attacking the football. They're not making a play on that ball. If you are going forward instead of going down into the slide position, you are completely eligible for whatever happens to you at that point in the eyes of the defender. So that to me was not good. That's fundamental issue, right? That's something he's seen so many times, right? Then the other one that was not great that we've also seen on another occasion is when you need to take a sack and you don't take the sack and you instead force a throwing lane and you do it without, in such a heavy traffic area with guys swarming, with rushers getting free of their blocks. And so now they're in your throwing lanes and they're putting their arms up in your throwing lanes. And you understand, because you've seen it on tape so many times, and because you've also had to be coached through these types of situations when you've made these errors in the past, and then you still force the football instead of simply folding around it and taking the sack in that situation, which you could have just, and it came out of this, you know, is to open the second half,
right?
Which also was not great, because you could have just had your two turnovers in the first quarter or the first half. You could have had your two turnovers and you could have just been like, all right, you know what? It's 7-3 and we're resetting in the locker room and we're completely resetting. And okay, so what if we have to punt on this drive because I took a sack on, what was it, second down? So what if I have to take that sack and we have to punt on this drive? We didn't allow points. We're resetting again with a punt, and the score is still in a manageable situation. We've also put our defense in a manageable situation. So to me, that, like, I can even forgive the Richard Sherman thing. It looked bad. I can forgive it.
Yeah.
What I don't think is acceptable, and what I think is a cause of frustration for Sean, who clearly, after gathering the players on the offense on the sideline at one point and trying to talk them through all of the errors in the first half, coming out of the locker room at the halftime, I think that is one of those ones that just really sticks at you.
Oh yeah.
You know, especially when you're asked specifically, what's the commonality in these turnover situations? That's the one that keeps you up at night, those types of things.
Oh yeah. I mean, it set the Rams went into a funk there for so long. They finally came out of it when Aaron Donald decided he was just going to take over the game and turn things around. But I mean, they went into a total funk after that interception got returned. And Jordan, I agree 100% with you. And then the thing that gets me is that you can't say Jared is a young quarterback anymore. I mean, if you include the games he started in 2016 and you know, now more than half of this season, you're talking about four full seasons worth of NFL games now. And they're still seeing some things that you don't excuse now. And like you said, getting the sliding thing has always been an issue. I don't know. I'm just being honest. I'm not being sarcastic. I don't know why that hasn't been addressed. It seems like something, you know, relatively small that could be addressed, because not only is he putting himself at risk for losing the ball, he's putting himself at risk for injury to take a hit like that, which fortunately has not happened, but very easily could with some of the positions that he puts himself in that you just described. And then again, just some of the decisions. I mean, I think we talked about it at the beginning of the year, and you know, looking back to 2019, Jared Goff is, yeah, you're not going to be perfect, but the one thing that you can control, if you're a quarterback, you can't control the play calling, you can't control the offensive line blocking, sometimes you can't control what the running backs do. The one thing you can control is holding on to that ball and making good decisions with where you put it. And that's one thing that, independent of anything else, I know a lot of Rams fans want to talk about Sean McVay, and I'm sure we'll do that here in some of the play calling. And, you know, does he put Jared in the right positions with his play calling and that sort of thing? I think there are issues there. There absolutely are. But there's things that are independent of that Jared just absolutely has to do better. And these were things that he was doing in 2017 and 2018. And for whatever reason, there's a little bit of a switch that flips there. And you get, I mean, people say it on Twitter, it's like good Jared, bad Jared. I mean, there's very little middle ground at this point. He's either really on it with some of those decisions and some of those throws, or you just look at it and you go, oh my goodness, you know, what's going on here? So it's really tough, Jordan. I mean, we almost go week to week back and forth with some of these, and you can't have that inconsistency at such an important position, I don't think.
No. And the thing that I think, like, people listening, I mean, please understand that there are some things he does extremely well. And yeah. So I think it makes the inconsistencies that are simple execution errors, I think that is part of what makes it so much more frustrating. Just if you're kind of breaking it down psychologically, if the answer is right in front of you, but you're just walking right past it on an inconsistent basis, I think that that's what's frustrating, because I mean, I just broke this down in a piece that I hope everyone read, although I know people were in turkey-induced comas last week. But it, Jared Goff, against specifically against blitz pressure, now this is not pressure overall, but specifically in, against blitz pressure since the Miami game, his play success rate has doubled against blitz pressure. His completion his quarterback rating has doubled. His completion percentage has gone up by like 30 points. Specifically against blitz pressure since the Miami game, not factoring in yesterday, although they did beat a cover zero once on third. I think it was even on third down.
Right.
And it was early on in the game. And, but you know what? Like it's, there are some things that he shows. It is clearly, he has the ability to execute and has the ability to kind of stay within himself in that regard. But I think the frustration comes in my understanding after, you know, obviously I'm new, but being here for a few months and just watching this guy every single day, the frustration comes from, you have all of the tools, all of them. Not only do you have all the tools, but you have a supporting cast that many quarterbacks in the league would just so envy. And so at this point, simple execution errors and then turnovers, which are the number one thing, like we said, that kill offensive momentum, that kill an offense, that sets you up for failure, even down the stretch, because it changes your entire game plan, especially the way that they committed it, where they were playing from behind for most of the game at this point. You know, it changes everything and it hurts everything. And the way I put it in my column, it was like the Rams offense, they don't ask Jared to do too much.
Right.
And that's pretty, I mean, that's pretty common across the league. Let's think big picture here for a second. There are some quarterbacks who have existed throughout history, maybe two or three in the league playing right now that are able to play outside of themselves, that are able to lift up an entirety of a football team or to lift up an offense based on the fact that they exist on the field. Right. And so at that point, you cater your game plan to scheming around the quarterback specifically. Okay. But on average, the entire NFL for decades at this point, quarterback play tends to sink to the mean.
Yeah.
And so what you need to do, if you're a smart offensive coach, which Sean McVay is, if you have a great staff, which he has, is you need to, all you need to ask of your quarterback is to play at the mean, is to be consistent, is to not force any outliers to change what you do at the mean, to play at the mean. And then the rest of your offense, because you are executing at the mean, the rest of your offense is supposed to then all execute together and then rise past the mean, be above average, be efficient. And that's what the Rams offense is designed to do with this cast of characters that they have. Okay.
Yeah.
But Jared Goff, with turning the ball over the way he is forcing outliers upon this offense. And the way that I put it in my column is that Cooper Kupp said, you know, agreed and said that the offense operates as a sum of its whole and not necessarily individual parts. It's best when they are operating as a whole, a function of the whole, of the entirety. And he's right. Mm-hmm. And so the way that I see it is like, I picture a hand curling into a fist. Maybe this says something about me psychologically, I don't know. But I picture a hand and the fingers curl, each finger curls into the fist and you start to swing. Okay. Well, what if you are punching a bag, a wall, hopefully not another person, but a bag or a wall, and one of your fingers is now sticking straight out as you make contact. You break the finger, your entire hand is useless. That is what forcing outliers upon this offense does.
Yeah. And this is the difference between the 2017-2018 Rams and most of the 2019-2020 Rams, is because it was a symphony before. It was every piece doing its own little part. And what you found, what it created was beautiful music, you know, to use another, look at it in another way, but it's the same.
Yours is so much more peaceful than mine. What's wrong with me? Your metaphor is nicer than mine.
We're talking about football, so yours is more apt, I think, punching somebody in the face rather than playing the trombone or something. But but it's the same. We're talking about the same thing here, you know. And this is the thing that Jordan, I push back a little bit, but not too much, because I understand when people say, "Oh, Jared Goff is a system quarterback." And I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so please tell me if you disagree, but I think where I look at it as, yeah, there's generational talents. There's the Patrick Mahomes of this generation. There's the Brett Favre of the 90s or whatever, to where, yeah, you put them on a football field and they could never have met the other 10 guys that they're playing with, and they'd probably figure it out. Like, they'd probably figure out a way to score a touchdown somehow. But so many of these other quarterbacks, yeah, you have a designed system, and that's what Jared Goff is playing under. It's the system that Sean McVay devised or tweaked or whatever you want to say when he came in 2017, because he knew what he had. He had Jared Goff. He knew what Jared Goff's skill set was. So he figured out how to run the offense through Jared Goff and what he had, what his skill set was. And at the time, you had a lot of other good parts. You had a healthy 2,000-yard Todd Gurley. You had arguably the best offensive line in the NFL. And now it's changed a little bit. But, you know, so all of these things kind of go hand in hand. And I guess just to circle back, yeah, when Jared does some of these things, when he makes these bad plays and forces these turnovers, it's like, yeah, however you want to put it, it's the finger sticking out, or it's the squeaky instrument that isn't making the right sound, but either way, it's mucking up the works, right? And it just, you can't have that and still have a productive, consistent offense, I don't think.
Yeah, and the main question I'd heard since I got here was like, what do you think Jared Goff's ceiling is? Even fellow analysts and colleagues ask me, what do you think Jared Goff's ceiling is? Right. Well, I don't think that's the right question to be asking, even. I really don't think that's the right question. And I pose this in my column as well, is I don't think you, if you're dealing with, again, you're dealing with, you understand that quarterback play across the league is going to settle into the mean. So you're trying to collectively raise your own average from your offense, but you do understand that extrapolating quarterback play, it's going to settle into the average, into the mean. Well, then everything else that happens below that, you need to figure out how to raise that level up. So instead of asking like, oh, what's his ceiling? What can he achieve with the Rams? What could his ceiling be?
Right.
I think it sounds negative, but it's really not. I think you need to be asking what his floor is.
Right.
I think you need to say, hey, let's have an honest conversation. Let's figure out what our quarterback's floor is. And at that point, you can start to raise that. You can plug in where those holes are, where those outliers are being forced that are killing your average and even your successful. And you can start to raise where that floor is. And you can raise it a little bit incrementally higher every single year. And then maybe now you're kind of where you're at on his worst days. You're still okay.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right. I think it's a weird question anyway, Jordan. Like, what's his ceiling? This guy, 2 years ago, he's 24 years old or whatever he was. He takes a team to the Super Bowl. He throws for over 4,500 yards, I think. He throws for more than 30 touchdowns. I think we found his ceiling. Like, that's, I don't know how much better you can get than that, other than like one scoring drive against the Patriots that would have won you a Super Bowl ring. I mean, that's pretty good. I don't know what there is beyond a ceiling, but you're right. It's the other direction that is the bigger concern, because I think we've seen what happens when everything is clicking. It's hey, what's going on when there's problems, and how can they get around it? So I think what you're seeing is you're just seeing less of that consistency and more of these issues popping up, and it's not what you want. But you know, we'll see if they can get it fixed or I don't know if you're Jared Goff, but Jared, you know, Jared's so even keel too. I mean, I know you talked to him on the video call after the game. I know how hard it is to, you know, when you're not face to face with somebody, but seemed like he was pretty Jared, right? I mean, he wasn't flustered or wasn't upset. I mean, how do you think he's going to process all of this.
The thing is like, I have not been presented with one, even one iota of a variable that could put doubt into my mind that he's not processing it well, that he's not handling the criticism well, that he's not understanding not only where Sean is coming from, but exactly seeing it himself, saying those same things to himself. And so I think that that's what we're looking at here. I mean, I saw someone go out there and was like, you know, who does Sean think he is? Bruce Arians, who Bruce Arians had, you know, somewhat famously criticized Tom Brady a couple weeks back. That's not, this is not the same situation. Okay. No. This is not the same situation. This was a situation where both the coach and the quarterback were fully aware and had accepted that responsibility of what had happened. And it's also not like Sean McVay got up on the podium and was like, everything that ever happens to us and then to me personally is Jared Goff's fault if it's bad. And that's not at all what's happened. Sean even said the royal we that he always falls back to consistently. Right. But there was a moment where, and I do want to talk about this for a minute too, Rich, there was a moment where in public with the eyes of his other players in the locker room on him, Sean McVay, I think, made the right decision in criticizing briefly, one sentence, criticizing Jared. And I think that the things that we don't see now, listen, before anyone freaks out, this is probably one of the better locker rooms I've ever been around, and I haven't even been in the damn thing. So these guys, they really get along with each other. They like each other. They care about each other. Yeah. The way that everybody interacts at practice is really cool to watch. There's a very much a selfless sort of brotherly vibe. Okay. So before anyone freaks out, however, I do think that a coach can sometimes travel down the wrong path if there's too much sort of protection around the quarterback, if the quarterback is very clearly making fundamental mistakes, such as right. like those two turnovers that we had talked about earlier, fundamental mistakes, not understandable mistakes, fundamental ones. Right. And so if you are a coach and your entire team, you know, guys who have been playing football their entire lives, who are also making a paycheck, who in some points are also star players or role players, or, you know, guys who want to win just as bad as everybody else. And if you're a head coach who is constantly, and you sit there and you just make excuses for the guy, or you protect him, or you put it on yourself when it's so clearly not on you at that, in that particular example,
right.
You start to wonder. I've seen it happen in locker rooms where you're just like, well, what the hell, man? Like,
yeah.
What, you know, why is he so special? Why is he getting treated differently?
Yeah.
And you hear stories about this through the decades inside locker rooms, but that's not going to happen here. And it's not happening here. And I think that's part of it is Sean McVay making the conscious and I think smart and forward thinking and also logical, even dare I say, decision to offer that public criticism, because I think that goes a long way in a locker room, and it's not something that Jared can't handle. He's fine.
Right.
He's going to be fine. He probably is just going about, he's going to go about his week the same he always does. You know, obviously putting that extra work in with these simple mistakes, as I understand it, that's what's happening now. And, you know, but he's not going to sit there and get the yips all this. I mean, could it be worse? Yeah. Right. He's not going to get the yips all of a sudden because coach hurt his feelings.
Right.
He's fine.
Right.
Like, he's processed it. It's fine. They're moving on.
Yeah. And this is, if there's one fruit of what he went through in 2016, I mean, this is it. It can never get worse than that, where the guy could barely get off a pass and he went 0-7 and everything else. The coach got fired. And I mean, he's been through the fire as a rookie already, but yeah, he's just, he's not going to be bothered by this. I don't think that's true. And I agree, Jordan, you do, especially when with McVay being an offensive head coach, you don't want that to even have the appearance of that.
No, especially when your offense is statistically underperforming,
sure,
to their average. And sorry to interrupt you, Rich, but
nope.
Not scoring over 30 points, by the way.
Yeah.
as an offensive head coach, if you are underperforming, you cannot, if your unit is underperforming, by the way, has brought back much of the same personnel, by the way, has been doing similar things in years past in terms of scheme, and you have an entirely new defensive scheme and several new players, new starters at certain key points. And then as an offensive coach, you know, you are then not criticizing the person who is making those egregious mistakes. You could have the nicest guys in the world in that locker room. And honestly, these guys are pretty dang close. They all really like each other, but you still are causing that, hey man, what the hell? That's still kind of a, sure. You know, you can't afford to do that as an offensive head coach.
Yeah. Cause these guys are competitive and they want to win, and they hold themselves accountable. So they want, I'm sure they want their head coach to hold them accountable too, if they're serious about this. And I think that those guys are. So yeah, I think it was a good move. But Jordan, I want to hit two other things real quick. And I know we want to talk about the defense too, but just again, to underscore, because I'm not mocking, but I know it comes up a lot on social media and things. The Rams are not going to go to John Wofford. That's not going to happen. I know some people want that to happen. Jared Goff is the quarterback. He just signed a massive new contract, $110 million guaranteed. To people asking if they can go out and get somebody else, no, they cannot. They are tied to Jared Goff. They are in wedded. They're not in wedded bliss at the moment, but they are married for quite a while. So that's not going to happen. But Jordan, people did ask some very reasonable questions about Sean McVay and just kind of his culpability in some of this. And I got to be honest with you. I'll be really honest with you. I'm going to punt this to you because I'm really not sure. And I have not been shy about criticizing Sean and some of his play calling and things like that. But I don't know, how much do you think he played a part in that on Sunday? How much blame do you put on his shoulders? I know a lot of people were saying like, well, how come they didn't get the ball to Cooper Kupp? Well, you know, Sean can't sit there and design a play or call a play that's guaranteed to get the ball to Cooper Kupp. So I don't really put that on his shoulders. This is an issue at times. I mean, is it fair, Jordan, or how fair is it to put a little of this on Sean?
I think that at some, you know, in some cases, sure, I think it could be fair. By the way, Cooper Kupp achieved, I think, less than a yard and a half of separation, which is one of his lowest all season, right, according to Next Gen Stats. So that, you know, this is such a cliche saying, but the guys, you know, football people love saying this, is the other guys get paid too. Well, Cooper Kupp was, I mean, he was pretty well covered yesterday. So, and this is a guy who can really separate, right? So this is not, you know, just for one example. And I, anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that I disagree with some of the calls. At least I would say on average, two calls per game I disagree with. Yeah. And obviously sometimes are a lot higher than that. I disagree with giving up on third downs and running it on third and 20. I disagree on not going for it on statistically sound fourth down plays when you're in a reasonable field position. I disagree with those types of things. But when you go back and you watch, conceptually, a lot of times the design is there. And so it comes, a lot of times it does come down to execution. And in some parts, I think rhythm as well, because it's not just about designing the right play and having, a book full of successful plays that have great design, but it's also using them in certain situationals. It's also, the rhythm of the game, when to run versus when to pass, and how to, apply that in all phases with execution. So no, I don't think that, I think that yes, every game, I don't think any coach in the league has ever called a perfect game. I think that Sean does open himself up to some criticism at certain times, particularly on the points that I had mentioned previously. But also, when it comes down to it, execution is really hurting them at times. And you see it right there in front of you with the turnover numbers. And this is, again, and guys, like, the efficiency, turnover efficiency, they are getting killed because their defense is actually also taking the ball away quite well. but they are still in the negative differential in turnovers. That is not good. You cannot historically win football games that way.
Right.
And so I think that is the number one thing is simple execution errors. And I mentioned it again in my column. I said, it's like whack-a-mole. They're playing whack-a-mole with the offense because every time they fix one problem, another one pops up. And I think that's where Sean gets frustrated is because there have been times when it's been him where he's like, man, and he, at the beginning of the year, he's like, man, some of those calls were vomit inducing. Well, right. Then there also have been execution errors. There also have been drops. There also have been like blatant overthrows or underthrows. There also have been turnovers. There also have been fumbles, you know? So I think it's not one thing. There are things that skew it more largely.
Yeah.
Such as the turnovers, but I don't think it's any one thing. But again, like, I think that, you know, a coach is never going to call a perfect game, but I think in a lot of these situations, you can see that the design is there.
Right.
Barring some things like, going back to screens time and time again, when they're getting blown up or certain run pass decisions, whatever, but overall in the big picture of things, you can see that the design is there. So yeah. I do think that that's an interesting critique, but you know, I don't think anyone's free of critique, but it is an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. And again, you talked about the other guys get paid too. The other coaches get paid too. And that's a pretty good staff that they've got over there in San Francisco. And it's been that way for a while. Obviously they had a great season last year and they'd probably be even better this year without all the injuries and COVID-19 situation and everything else. I'm not trying to pump up the 49ers, but let's give a little bit of credit to some guys who can design a pretty good defense over there too. So I think that needs to be said. But speaking of designing a pretty good defense, what did we make of this, Jordan? Now I thought, I know, as we usually do, we're on Slack, you know, back and forth, and I thought the defense was going to win the game there. I mean, they just absolutely took over. You could see the fire just get lit, you know. Obviously when Aaron Donald makes a couple huge plays and then they force a three and out and you just went, oh man, they're gonna pull this out whether the offense wants to or can or whatever. It's going to happen because of this defense. So an interesting game in that I believe, unless I'm really bad at math, the Rams defense only allowed one touchdown.
Right.
But then again, two drives in the fourth quarter where, yeah, they keep the 49ers out of the end zone, but they do allow two pretty good drives that result in field goals that end up first tying the game and then winning the game with zeros on the clock. So I don't know. I'm a little mixed. I mean, overall, it was a good defensive effort, I thought. They had a little bit of trouble. Well, they had a lot of trouble at first, kind of controlling the edges and trying to figure out what to do with Debo Samuel and some of those things. I thought they got some of those things cleaned up and then, again, almost threatened to take over the game there late in the third quarter, early in the fourth. But then they softened a little bit and gave up those two big field goals. So I don't know. How did you process that overall game from the defense?
Yeah, good, not great. I think they did some things that were very, very good. They also saw some of their weaknesses exposed. And by that, you know, you're missing Terrell Lewis and, you know, Samson Ebukam, who I think has performed well in certain flashes, but in terms of setting the edge, teams are running, you know, right at him all the time. And it's not, he's some, you know, with their depth on the outside right now, they're having a lot of trouble setting an edge. They also had Troy Reader at linebacker. And one thing that you probably don't want to do with Troy Reader is run him sideline to sideline.
Right.
Well, the 49ers did exactly that, as we had predicted that they would in the mailbag this week. And I had asked Brandon Staley about, and Brandon Staley was like, thought his eye was going to start twitching, because he's like, we got to secure our edges. Because if you don't secure the edge, then, you know, at that point, the linebacker is taking a bad angle to the hit point. Then you're basically, your only hope at that point is pushing a guy out of bounds. And that's what they ended up having to do with Debo Samuel. It was really, really evident and really, you know, pressure was difficult. Mullins was getting the ball out of his hand as quickly as Jimmy Garoppolo had before. He's something like 2.15 seconds per throw. Yeah. Really tough to get the pass rush going if you're getting the ball out of your hand that quickly. And then again, you get the ball out, then you can go horizontal. And if your edge isn't set, then you can get vertical, which is exactly what they were doing. So it was pretty much like a typical Shanahan deal that has hurt them when they're stretched wider, when they're having trouble asserting what type of blocking they're going to get from the guys who are on the outside helping the horizontal plays happen. And that's exactly what Troy Reader was saying when he talked to us after the game, the day after the game, was he was just like, man, it was, you know, it's hard to, you have to really start stronger. You have to start faster in terms of asserting yourself against that blocking system when they're stretching you wide, when you're having trouble securing your edge in that way. And I really thought that was the biggest problem. You know, I think that there was some confusing things about the way that they were rotating their defensive backs in. We found out Jalen Ramsey played the least snaps he's played all season. Sean McVay told us that he had a little bit of a quote unquote hip thing that he reported pregame. Seemed like new information to the coaching staff. And so, you know, we saw him less on the field than maybe we would have. And I'm, you know, again, it's hard to know whether those two are related, but because the Rams also were in base quite a bit. And by base, I mean the quote unquote 3-4 or even less of a 3-3-5 that they'd been playing quite a bit of. And part of it is they don't have a lot of extra defensive backs to spare to come in and help the linebackers out first and foremost. And then you can't move Jalen inside more because, again, you're trying to seal the outsides and the perimeter because the perimeter plays are killing you. So I think that had something to do with it. But I mean, again, it's, you know, I was as surprised as anyone else to find that Jalen Ramsey apparently was dealing with a hip thing. So that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, very interesting. So the numbers, I mean, Troy Hill plays 65 of the 72 snaps. Jalen Ramsey only 50 of the 72. Darius Williams, 36. And then quite a cameo appearance from David Long, who ends up playing 22 of the 72 snaps. So, yeah, that's not something's going on there. That's not certainly not normal, whether it's injury or whatever, but yeah, it's it definitely was noticeable, and I know fans were even noticing it and mentioning it on Twitter during the game that you know, there were times when both Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald were on the sideline, and that's not an ideal situation for that Rams defense. So it'll be interesting to see. I guess we'll see if Jalen Ramsey pops up on an injury report. We won't get the next one until Wednesday, I guess, but definitely not, probably not an ideal situation all around for that Rams defense. But yeah, I mean, they were almost there. Like I said, Jordan, those Aaron Donald plays, I mean, oh my goodness. Phew. I mean, how...
I mean, what do you even say? I mean, honestly, as a writer, what do you even say at this point? There aren't any words left to describe what he can do when he takes a game over and the palpable shift in energy. And like, I'm, I think, a blend of analytically minded and also in terms of viewing football as such an emotional game, I'm probably a blend of that, but I still believe that that's such a emotional shift. Now, I'm going to avoid using the phrase momentum, but right. It's such an emotional shift, and it's like getting a shot of adrenaline. You know, that scene in that movie with Jonah Hill, where he gets the adrenaline shot and he's like, I'm alive. Like that is what Aaron Donald does to a defense. Yeah. And he just breaks a game open. He just does. And teams spend their entire week, if not more, figuring out ways to try to keep him from doing exactly what he did. And he breaks a game wide open. And then you have a chance to go win it. And you know, the offense lets you, like Cam Akers had all three carries on that drive, three play drive that he scored his second touchdown of the season. All three carries, all three plays were Cam Akers. Yeah. So that was a Cam Akers drive in the offensive line. And then you still have something like what, 12 minutes left to play, and you can't put any more points up after that, even though you get the ball back because of a Morgan Fox sack. So, I mean, And then you miss Daryl Henderson wide open. But anyway, not to rub it in.
That's another one.
I'm here for you, Rams fans. I'm here for you.
Well, should we talk about something positive? ABTAC?
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
ABTAC.
Always be talking about kickers. You know, I do want to shout out the one guy who comes into the Athletic comment section. Mm-hmm. Great comment section, by the way.
Yes.
He caught it the first time when I accidentally said ABTAC with a C. Because the phrase that we're playing off of is always be closing, the old salesman phrase. Yeah. And so when I said ABTAC, always be talking about kickers, I said ABTAC, always be talking about kickers, clearly right. is wrong, but I didn't even realize it until much later. And this guy is so funny. He will always come in and say, hey, this game, you don't have to talk about kickers, but he says it with a C instead of a K. Isn't that great?
That is great?
I was like, oh my God, that's fantastic.
Maybe we should let people on the comments or on Twitter come up with what ABTAC with a C means. Although maybe that's a bad idea.
That's enough. No, don't even quote that. Don't do that.
We might read that? Some of them on the podcast. Probably not all of them. as shocking as this is to say, Jordan, in this late in the season, the Rams had no issues at kicker on Sunday. So I don't even know what day it is. Matt Gay, you can literally cannot ask for any more than what Matt Gay did in that game on Sunday. I mean, he hits two pretty good field goals. He's good from 48 and 41. He makes both of his extra points and booms five touchbacks through the end zone. No doubters.
Five whole touchbacks
in one game. Yeah. You almost hesitate to jinx it, but it kind of looks like the Rams found their guy. Sean McVay sounded a little fired up too. Not as fired up as he was the previous week, but he sounded pretty happy.
Yeah, you know, he was I think still a little bit frustrated when he spoke. So I can no worries, man. I get it. It's fine. But I did get in a kicker question at the end. They sound really enthusiastic about Matt, and I think that's good. It's sort of a unclench situation, because as we know, it's been a journey to get here. And the fact that as the ball was coming off his foot, it wasn't like there wasn't a whole lot of worry about it. The trajectory was really good. He basically shot his touchbacks out of a cannon, and if the cannon was angled upward at a 45 degree angle. Sure. And, you know, it was really a solid game from Matt that makes you sort of unclench, I think, if you're the Rams personnel staff and you're sort of watching that. And I think importantly too, on the 48 yard field goal. That 48 yard field goal, he had some room at the end.
Yeah.
And that's also important, because you're still in the process of establishing what this guy's range is. You're kicking in pretty ideal situations at this point, weather-wise. And so you're sort of now, you're now in a more of a controlled situation. And so now you're sort of establishing range, and you're developing trust in the kicker and all of these different things. And so to be able to boom a 48 yarder with some room left over, I think is a really, really good thing. And Matt technically has to stay on the 53 man roster this year because of COVID rules, has to stay through this upcoming game against Arizona before they would even be allowed to even cut him, or then cut him and then bring him back to the practice squad, or whatever they would do. Right. But so far, that's not something that's really in consideration, because he's been doing very, very well for them. So if this 3-week period is his quote unquote tryout period, he's performing. He's definitely, definitely exceeding expectations for sure.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. That's going to be important. I mean, he easily could have won this game for the Rams on Sunday with the performance. I mean, he puts a lot of points on the board. I mean, he puts eight points on the board just by himself there, and when you can rely on that in a tight game, that is no small thing. And you don't need to tell Rams fans that after what they've seen earlier this season. But Jordan, you know, 7-4, right? I mean, as wild as it is to think, there's only five games left in this regular season. I don't know how. I don't know where they went. It goes so very fast. But you're looking at the bookends, the Arizona Cardinals, of course, this weekend on the road, and then the season ender at SoFi Stadium. And then in the middle, you've got the Patriots at home. You've got the New York Jets at home. And then, of course, Woo-hoo! You've got quite a rematch up there in Seattle. So it's going to be you obviously, again, you do the math on your hands, right? I mean, you got 7 wins. You play the Jets. If you don't lose that one, I mean, if you don't win that one, you might as well just not play the last two. I don't know what the point is if you can't beat the Jets. So you're looking at 8. New England looks to me to be a pretty winnable game. Obviously, Bill Belichick's always going to have some stuff up his sleeve for Sean McVay, but there's a pretty good path there to win number 9. And then you've got 3 really tough division games, and I think it's really going to come down to how do you do in those 3 games. And I can't wait to see this game at Arizona. I think it's going to be a very interesting matchup with this Rams defense and that Cardinals offense. Arizona, you know, they're back to 6-5 now, so they've lost 2 in a row. They're stumbling a little bit, and I think that was kind of the question with them is how are they going to fare down the stretch. But that's still a really potent team, and Jordan, I look at this game as a really, really important one because you don't want to get to those last 2 games. You don't want to get to at Seattle and versus the Cardinals and need to win both of those games. So I think these next 3 games, and especially starting this Arizona game, is going to be really, really important.
Yeah, you want to be I'm just rephrasing what you said, is you want to be able to decide your own fate earlier. Yeah. And so I think that obviously that establishes that, you know, not to just so abruptly pivot, Rich, but actually, as we were looking at this, I'm looking at the score chart yesterday, and I'm realizing, I mean, I knew it at the time, but I'm realizing that once you said it just the light bulb went off. Matt Gay responsible for 8 points. Rams defense responsible for 6 points. Yeah. Rams offense, Cam Akers on every single play responsible for 6 That's points. Right. Not great, man. Not great. That's, but anyway, yes, yeah. these are things that they need to hammer out. And yeah, just like what you said, you really, really want to be in a position where you're at least having some say over your fate. You're not sitting and waiting for other results to happen. You kind of know where you stand. And then let's keep in mind too, guys, they are getting some people back. They're expecting to get Micah Kizer back. They're expecting to get Taylor Rapp back. They actually are expecting to get Andrew Whitworth back. So, yeah. You know, these are things that if you can decide your fate early on, you can certifiably cruise into the playoffs, even if it's not like a totally stellar playoff seat. Knock on wood, you're still healthier than most of the teams around the league right now. You have managed to keep your ecosystem largely intact, and you're getting guys back at the right time. So I think that you really want to win these next couple, starting with Sunday in Arizona.
I can't wait. It's going to be a great game to watch, I think. And there's nobody better to follow along with than Jordan Rodrigue. And you can read her coverage at The Athletic on our app, on our website. And definitely follow along on Twitter, also at Jordan Rodrigue. For those who don't know, Jordan does a mailbag at the end of every week, every Friday. So if you have questions that maybe we didn't address on the podcast, it's a great opportunity to go and ask your questions, and then you can subscribe and read the mailbag when it's posted on Friday. Jordan puts a ton of thought and research into her answers. So if you ask a question, I guarantee you, you're going to get a good answer. And Jordan, one of your very favorite things in the entire world, what is it and how can our friends get it?
Yeah. So you guys, even though our Black Friday sale ended at midnight on November 30th, aka December 1st, and holy crap, it's December. You can always, always, always get some sort of a discount when you subscribe to theathletic.com through the 11 Personnel podcast. I cannot stress that enough. It's my favorite thing in the world. We have just exploded in subscribers this year, and I'm just so grateful to all of you guys who have jumped on to listen to us, to read our coverage. Rich is we just, I mean, I'm gushing now. I know that I risk this all the time because I'm just so grateful, but Rich Hammond, best editor in the world. You can follow him at Rich_Hammond. Also get some great spicy uniform takes.
Oh yeah. Always.
Yeah. And as usual, we are going to be here every week for you guys through the season. And you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. But if you find us on iTunes, please leave us a review. We would like 5 stars, but we are a little bit biased. And we read everything you guys write to us. So whether it's a question in the mailbag, folks on Twitter, I do go back and I read through at the end of every week. I go back and I read through different questions. If I am able to answer it at that time, then I try to do it. If I need to poke around a little bit, trust me, I still have it in my mind and I'll try to get back to you. And man, thanks for listening.